You are listening to a talk given at the Brisbane City Bible Forum. We hope you enjoy the presentation.
Well, they say in polite company, you shouldn't talk about money, politics, or religion. And I think today I'm going to get the trifecta. I don't think, though, that money is the taboo topic that it used to be. It used to be that you couldn't mention money at all. But now we talk about it a lot. You know, there's whole newspapers, magazines, TV shows, TV channels, all dedicated to money. I mean, sure, they're not interesting ones, but they're there. Money, it's everywhere. And yet we acknowledge, like Glenn said, that money is not the end of life. There's more to life than money. There's even this ad from the NAB.
One of the biggest financial investments of your life. Expenditure, of course, will begin immediately. Pretty soon you'll discover a whole new list of everyday costs. Costs like childcare, health, recreation, more food and groceries, and bigger energy bills. And that's before the really expensive ones crop up. What if you need a bigger car or a bigger house? And of course, there's always education. And so, on average, after 18 years, you'll invest $450,000 on your child with little or no financial return on your investment.
Life. It's about more than money. NAB.
Ah, hits you in the feels, doesn't it? This is what the NAB have said about the ad. We like to think that when it comes to family, it's not just about the figures. In fact, we think that this rings true for all of life's big decisions. They're the kind of decisions where people and passions often come first. It's our way of saying, we're here to support you every step of the way. I think this ad brilliantly just sums up how we feel about money. I mean, there's a bit of a, why is a bank trying to make us feel good about family and not thinking about money? I think you know why they want us to feel good about stuff and not think about money. But we do have this dual attitude when it comes to money. This realism and idealism come into the mix. Idealistically, we believe what the ad says, that money is not important, family is important, that life is about chasing your dreams and the things that you love. Idealistically, I know that life is more than money. Idealistically, I know that all you need is love. I know that money can't buy you love. And yet, realistically, there's that other Beatles song. Your love give me such a thrill, but your love don't pay my bills. I need money! See, realistically, we know that money does seem to make the world go round. Realistically, we know that NAB is not really concerned about how you feel, but really about your business and your money and their profit margins. And I really hope that someone from NAB is not here and being offended by this. But realistically, we live in a material world, and I am a material... girl or boy. But more than that, money, it's not just this unnecessary evil that we just put up with so that we can do the stuff that we want. We actually love money. I'm not sure if you've noticed this in TV shows and movies, but whenever there's a bank heist or someone, you know, makes some money somehow, wins the lottery, this image keeps popping up. Here's a few of them. The character starts swimming in, dancing around in, rolling around in, kissing even money. They get intimately involved with the money they've just won. And it's silly, but it just keeps popping up again and again. Why is it? I think it touches something with us. There's a degree to which we actually love money. And I think there's no coincidence that idols in the ancient world were made out of gold, weren't they? Trent Reznor has sung a song. where he sings, God money, I'll do anything for you. God money, just tell me what you want me to do. You see, money is sort of a quasi-religion. People sacrifice their health, their family, their morals even, on the altar of money. But not me, right? I mean, I know that other people out there think that and feel that, but not me. I don't think about money like that. Well, I think there's four main ways that each of us react to money. And I'm just going to say some statements and see which one of them hits home for you. I look up to people who have been very financially successful. Having money or high-quality things reflects well on me. This is money as status. Money is all about who I am. Or maybe these ones. I feel more secure when I know I have enough money to pay the bills. I would rather have a safe buffer in the bank than some new purchase. Then you probably think of money as security. Or maybe money can't buy happiness, I know, but it sure helps. People who have money have more fun. For you, maybe money is fun. Or one of the more important benefits about money is the ability to influence other people. Or maybe I think it's important to be in control of the money I earn. Then maybe for you, money is about control. See, status, security, fun, or control, we look to money to provide those things that we feel that we need. And now, despite knowing, though, that life is more than money, despite knowing and knowing for certain that the more money we have doesn't necessarily lead to more happiness, and we know that we're richer today than we ever have been, and yet we're also more depressed and anxious than we ever have been. So despite knowing all that, we still live as if we're the exception to the rule, don't we? That I know it doesn't work for other people, but maybe for me, if I have enough money, if I was rich beyond my wildest dreams, I could be the one who gets happy. But the thing is, we don't realise just how rich we are. I was in Garden City just a little while ago. I had some lunch. This is a photo of the food court there. It's a literal oasis. You've got water there just bubbling along. And it's not to be drunk. It's perfectly good drinking water, but it just is there for show. In fact, if you started drinking it, people would look at you weird because there's all this other stuff to be enjoyed. There's food and drink from all over the world, and you don't have to cook it. Someone else will cook it for you, however you want it, however you like it. And once you've done, you just leave the remains there, and someone will clean up after you. This is a life that kings dreamed of, and we live it. We are rich in ways that only could be imagined, you know, not too long ago. But the thing about being rich is that people don't think of themselves as rich. There's a recent survey where only 2% of Australians think of themselves as rich. 2%. Despite the fact you see that actually the affluent makes up something like 25%. So a quarter of us are going to be think of it as rich, but only 2% of us actually think of ourselves as rich. In fact, of the top 25% of earners and owners in Australia, so people who have money or have a great income, the majority think of themselves as battlers. They think, yes, I'm earning more than $200,000 a year, but I'm a battler. It's weird. We don't think of ourselves as rich. Now, the philosopher Nietzsche, he once asked this question about white-collar crime. He said, have you noticed that people who don't need to steal? Have you noticed that? People who have enough to eat and enough to drink, nevertheless, they still rob others of money through fraud or through other means. Why does that happen? And Nietzsche says it's because they're watching their wealth pile up too slowly. Where once they used to do things for the love of God, they're now doing things for the love of money. Nietzsche's diagnosis is, it's not the money, it's the greed that lies behind all this. Greed is this amazingly deceptive vice that we all seem to be blind of. It's awesome and easy to see it in others, but it's really difficult to see it in ourselves. There's a social psychologist at the University of California called Paul Piff, and he's done a number of experiments, and one of the clearest is he got students at the University of California to play a game of Monopoly. And at the start, what he did was he would flip a coin, to get the students to flip a coin, and they would choose one person, and they would get certain benefits. The game would be rigged in their favour. They'd get an extra dice, so they go around the board quicker. They got more money at the start, and every time they went past go, they got more than just the $200. And they then observed how that impacted the players. And you know what they found? The privileged players played more aggressively. They would actually literally thump their piece along the board as they went. They would show displays of aggressive behaviour toward and dominant behaviour towards the other players. They even ate more pretzels than the other players. And when they eventually won the rigged game, they would ask the students to share about their experience of the game. And the amazing thing was, even though the players clued into the fact that they had more money or they were getting privileges that the other players didn't, they still spoke about winning the game because of their strategy. They still spoke about winning the game because they earned that win somehow. And what is found through this and other experiments is that the more wealth you have, the more privilege that you have, the more likely you are to start moralizing about your self-interest. The more likely do you start to think along the lines of greed is good. The more likely we are the more wealth and more privilege we have, the more likely we are to start thinking that I actually deserve what I own. I've worked hard for it. This is mine. And on the other hand, those who don't have, well, they're lazy. They deserve their poverty. Now, I said I was going to get political, so here's a couple of quotes. From the Donald Trump. And he has said, "It's not been easy for me. My father gave me a small loan of $1 million. But can you hear? I think he actually believes that. I think he actually believes that that was an immaterial thing. He created this amazing thing from a small $1 million loan. Or even poor old Joe Hockey. If you want to buy a house, get a good job that pays good money. Away you go. See, now it's easy to take shots at Trump and Hockey, but can you see how greed impacts us in ways that we don't even realise? And we see it in others, but we don't see how it starts to eat away at who we are. Greed whispers in your ear, "You deserve this. You've worked hard for this." Greed blinds you to the benefits of the leg up you got from your parents or your life or the school you went to or all those things. Greed says, "It's your hard work. You deserve it. You've made it because of your sweat of your own brow." But more than that, greed actually infiltrates and is endemic into all of our financial systems. Adam Smith, who is the father of modern economics, once said, "It is not from benevolence that the butcher, the brewer, or the baker that we expect our dinner, but from their regard for their own self-interest." In other words, what he's saying there is that greed actually does make the world go round. Greed is good. But ever since the global financial crisis, you've seen economists sort of going, "Hang on, this doesn't work anymore. this whole system of just growth just doesn't seem to work. Because what we've been seeing is that that as an attitude is ultimately damaging, because unbridled greed destroys trust. And this is important, because Adam Smith doesn't get the whole picture there. The economy that we enjoy and we live in doesn't actually work because of greed. It's actually trust that lies at the base. So the economist Ross Gittins said, "Guess what? The global financial crisis can be explained as a consequence of the breakdown of trust, as different bad loans and greed started crumbling and people stopped trusting each other. The money dried up and things fell over." Sam Crosby said, he's the executive director of the McKell Institute. Sam Crosby says, "Trust is such an important part of economic growth that researchers have singled it out as one of the strongest predictors of a country's wealth or poverty. Various studies conclude that one reason countries remain poor is that low levels of trust lead to chronic underinvestment in long-term projects capable of creating jobs and raising incomes." So how does this all work? Say you come into my shop and I'm selling fruit, and you buy some plums, maybe a couple of mangoes and a pineapple. And I ask you for, say, $5, and you go away happy. Now, what's going on there is that you're trusting me that what I've sold you is actually edible and is good to eat. You're trusting me that I haven't somehow poisoned it with a spray to get rid of bugs or something like that, or made it look nicer than it is. I trust you that the money you've given me is genuine. Even more than that, I am trusting the government who printed that money that what it says on the front there, $5, is actually worth exactly that if I was to take that to the bank. But when we stop trusting each other, things start slowing down. But we trust each other. Did that just turn off? Sorry. That should hopefully come back on. See, if we trust each other, then you have benefited from the fact that I've sold you food that you didn't have to grow. You now don't have to spend all that time in your own garden growing fruit. I don't have to also raise cattle. I can go next door to the butchers and use that $5 to get myself, I don't know, a sausage or something.
It's expensive sausage. Steak, yeah.
This is very small steak. But if we stop trusting each other, things slow down. We start having to create mechanisms to trust each other. We need to draw up contracts to start trusting each other. And we need to get lawyers and people to enforce those contracts so that we can entrust each other. You know, can you imagine signing a contract to get an apple or a mango? But that's what happens when the economy stops trusting. We get bogged down, we slow down. When we trust each other, money flows freely in an economy. When you stop trusting, that's when things slow down. We start hoarding money. So you see, trust, not greed, is what makes the world go round. Trust is vital for economy to work. It's trust between each other, but also, and much more importantly, trust in God. So let's see what Jesus had to say about money. And I've got a challenge for you. We're giving away out on the table there books called Essential Jesus, which is basically about Luke's gospel. I challenge you to go home and to read through that and have a look at what it has to say, what Jesus has to say about money. It's a really uncomfortable read. But let's have a look what he has to say here. "Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A person's life does not consist in the abundance of their possessions." And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain man produced a good crop. He thought to himself, "What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops." And then he said, "This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I'll store my grain and all my goods. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry." But God said to him, "You fool! This very night your life will be demanded of you. Then who will get what you prepared for yourself? This is how it will be for anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich toward God." Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Greed is such an insidious vice. We need to watch out for it. We need to be careful that we don't accidentally fall into it. That's not true of any other vice that you can name. You know, you can't accidentally steal from someone. You don't unknowingly commit adultery. You know, only greed is something you need to be careful of. Because greed eases you in. You deserve this. Come on, you've worked hard for this. And we see it in the parable. You look at the guy, what does he do wrong? What is the thing that he does wrong? He just seems to be a smart guy, right? I mean, he's got a good crop, and so he plows the profit back into his company. And he has a good goal. He wants to have an easier life, eat, drink, and be merry. It's not a bad thing. But can you see that greed has actually taken over? Look at his words. What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And then I will store all my grain and my goods. And then I'll say to myself, it's all about him. Not once has he talked about other people, how he can help other people. He's a fool because he hasn't thought about how he can help other people. And that's exactly what money's all about. Remember, money's not to be hoarded. It's to be used for other people. That's how the economy works. And there's that question, who will benefit from your riches now? He's dumb. No one's going to benefit from his riches. But the most damaging and dangerous thing is that he hasn't been rich towards God. The most dangerous thing about greed is that it misplaces our trust. It gets us to move our trust away from God who provides all things, give us this day our daily bread, and move it towards trusting in wealth. And we've seen in history again and again that money can fail us. Look at Weimar Germany. Look at Zimbabwe. And here's just a few photos. If you can't read it, that says $100 trillion. Crazy. And you need wads of this to buy a loaf of bread. But the worst thing is people who had this money and needed so much of it, the bank just kept printing and printing and printing, had so much of it, they would wheel the barrows of this money down the road to try and buy bread. And by the time they got to the bakery, that money wasn't now worth enough to buy the bread. It's just a terrible, terrible situation. I mean, this is crazy. It was cheaper in Weimar Germany to burn money than it was to burn coal. Now, money can fail us. Because money, you see, is just the veneer over the complex trust systems that is our economy. And when trust is gone, so too is wealth. Greed shifts our trust away from God and the God who provides all things that we need and lies to us. It tells us that we live in a world of scarcity and that we need to hold on to our wealth. And in the end, death cuts us all down. And it shows us for what really does matter, whether we've been rich towards God or not. There's a really excellent proverb that just, I think, sums up Jesus' attitude towards money. It says this, "Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, 'Who is the Lord?' Or may become poor and steal and so dishonor the name of my God." See, all good things are a gift of God. When greed causes us to forget that, we're in danger of trusting in money, which fails. And it won't last beyond death. Life is more important than money. And the most important thing in life is not gathering money, but to be rich towards God who provides all things that we need.